Why don't we just change this?
Good morning. I call this 38th meeting of the New Jersey Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council to order. My name is John Weingard. I live in Surgeonsville in Hunterdon County. Other members can introduce themselves.
Debbie Pasquarelli, Greenwich Township, Warren County Representative.
Liz Calabrese, Bergen County Freeholder.
Amy Les, Precipiny, Morris County.
Scott Whitenack, Public Member from Morristown.
Tahisha Wade, Passaic County Freeholder.
Tim Dillian, I'm a Public Member. I live in Mercer County.
Tracy Carluccio, Public Representative, Hunterdon County.
We do have a quorum. This meeting was advertised in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act and was publicized on the Council's website. All who wish, please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
John, this is Janice Kovacs. I'm on the phone.
Hi, Janice. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay. You missed the Pledge of Allegiance. Before we get to the minutes, we had a sign-in sheet at the front desk for anybody who'd like to speak today, just so we could keep track. If you didn't sign that list and would like to speak, there is a list by the table, and I'd ask that you sign it in the next few minutes if you could. We have minutes from two meetings in the packets for November, October 5th and October 12th. Let's start with the one from October 5th. Is there a motion to approve those minutes?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the minutes from the meeting of October 5th.
Perfect. Any comments or corrections?
Stay.
Okay.
Stay.
Okay, then we're not going to have folks to pass it. So we'll put that on hold for the next time. And October 12th, how many people will abstain from that?
I'm just doing 12.
What?
The 12.
You're abstaining. Okay, so we can't approve either of those.
Clemens.
Oh, Clemens.
Clemens,
I just saw him out in the hall. Maybe that would help.
Okay. Okay, so we will postpone those minutes for another time. As I think everyone in the room probably knows, we had originally intended to propose a draft regional management plan for public comment. Are not able to do that. We've changed the schedule so that we are now going to vote to release the plan on November 30th. And one of the benefits of that change is we get an opportunity today and to some extent over the next month to get more public input into the draft plan and more thoughts from those of you in the public who've been here for the meetings we've had over the last 6 or 7 weeks, the work sessions we've had discussing specific topics. We have had comments from many people after those meetings, and all council members have seen those comments, but we have more opportunity for that today. So that's the major agenda item today, will be to hear public comments. Our intention as council is to meet on November 30th and to propose a regional master plan at that point. Put it out for public comment and to have a 60-day comment period, to have public hearings in January, and we don't yet have the specific locations or dates, but we would have six public hearings around the Highlands region, as well as one in Trenton, and welcome public comments throughout that 60-day period. We are going to try to schedule either one or two council meetings between now and November 30th. The only day everyone seems to be available is Thanksgiving, so I'm not sure exactly how we're going to do this, but Denise has been trying to talk to all members as she came in, and if you haven't talked to her yet, do talk to her before you leave so we can get a sense of which days are least inconvenient for the most number of people. I guess that's the extent of my report, but I'm happy to answer any questions. Members have any questions about the schedule or the change of schedule? Or do any members have reports? Any items of report? I turn to Dante and the executive director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a few notes to follow up on your comments. The staff is continuing to work very hard to deliver the map and the sections of the plan for your review. We continue to have a strong sense of urgency to get this done well and on time. We have gone through considerable process to make sure we know exactly how we are doing that, how we are able to do that, how we will do it, and we've gone over that with the chairman. I've taken it on myself personally to make sure that based on the conversations with the chairman and with the executive staff, we have and can update a workable schedule, a list of all of the tasks that are necessary for staff to carry out to make sure that we deliver as required, that we have a consistent vision and format for the sections of the document that we will be sending to you over the next 2.5 weeks. We've given you the first section, first group of sections already, and we're looking forward to your comments. We will roll those in and on a rolling basis update the plan itself so that we can get that released to the members of the public in the near future. Steve is continuing with his responsibility of delivering the map. Tom will be working with staff to deliver the various sections that you will be reviewing over the next weeks. Between the two of them, and between those two sections, the map and the sections, we will have pulled together a plan in short order so that the members can provide comments. We can have a vote to release when the members are comfortable with what we have is appropriate for gathering public input, which is our next phase. So we understand the mission. We have a plan of action for doing it. We think the plan is very sound, and we are on schedule for making that happen. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd say we're also looking forward to getting the opportunity of hearing from the public. Through our work sessions, we were able to address all of those various topics that are now going into the sections of the plan. And that was very important. It was instrumental for members, I think, to have that discussion, to give us that feedback so we can deliver for you. And now I think it'll be very helpful for us to get comments from the public today on all of the things that they'd like to comment about that came out of the work sessions. And, of course, that will be in addition to the full public hearings that will follow that you indicated, Mr. Chairman. But members have indicated it's important to get that feedback so we can roll that into the draft plan when we release that, or when we vote to release that at the end of the month. So that's all that I have for the executive director's report.
Any questions for that? Then we'll turn to the public comments. The list I have, there are 10 people who signed up to speak so far. As I said before, if anyone would like to speak who hasn't signed up, just sign up at the table out there. Ask that you come up to the table and speak, and please recognize that we're not going to get into a dialogue and then answer questions, but to the extent anyone raises questions, members of the council or members of the staff will try to get back to you as quickly as possible with responses. So Frank Hammond.
And while he's approaching, John, let me ask you a question. It just occurred to me, there were documents emailed to us that were sections of the plan. Where are they in the process? What should we be doing at this point?
Yes, thank you, Debbie. I'm happy to clarify. We sent members a table of contents which shows you the proposed table of contents. It's similar but updated to the last version that we put out. If members will look at that, you will see how we've divided up the plan. Essentially, there's a background section. There's a section that deals with the map, the standards that go with them, and implementation. What we're calling sections are various pieces that come out of that table of contents, and we've highlighted the ones we presented to you today. The purpose is so that you see how the material, that's both the recommendations the staff had plus the comments the council members made in the policy papers that we presented during the workshops, have now been put into the text that would be in the plan. Our request is that if members can provide us with comments in a week's time internally, we will take those track changes and comments from all the members, try to work them in together so that the next time that you see the draft plan, you will see those sections put together plus additional sections that we'll send to you and hopefully get comments back in a week's time. And you can see how it's all being put into in the format structure that we recommend to you.
So we should be reviewing them for content at this point. These just weren't sent to us for examples or just for us to start reviewing for content.
The one subtlety in that regard is the forest one. The forest section, there are two types of sections that we have out there that we need to get to you. The first are the ones that are not dependent on the map, and the second sections are the ones that are dependent on the map. The forest one is an example of one that is dependent on the map. Since we're pulling the map together for you in the next several weeks, that one's not final in terms of content. We think it's largely good based on previous discussions. That one in particular, you should look at the formatting, because that has the format that we've worked out based on our conversation with members. It includes a sample overlay map that would be one of the maps that would go with that particular resource. But obviously, the cautionary note is once the plan is done, we'll need to go back and tweak that one a bit. But this way, we'll get it mostly ready. And if you can tell us that it's okay in terms of the format, and we can finalize the format, it's helpful. All the other ones that you got, the background documents, the documents that come out of smart growth generally aren't dependent on what's actually in the land use capability map. And those are ready as they are. And so you can look at both form and content to the extent that those might not be finalized in form. The format we're really aiming towards is the forest one, but they should largely be in format already.
And where does, I forgot what we called it, an editing committee?
Yes.
That was set up. Where are they going to come into this process? And as I'm looking at, and I know it's hard, chicken or the egg, what comes first, but on the one hand, too, if it's something that's going to be re-edited later, where are they fitting into this, so how critically I should look at wording?
The editing committee took a look at what I'll call the background sections, which includes significance of the Highlands region, the history of the region, the history of the region itself, the task force and other governmental actions and recommendations that came out of that, and also in that section will be existing conditions that are out there, socioeconomic. Except for those last two, the editing committee looked at those already, and we've updated it. At this point, we don't envision sending any of the operative sections, that is, sections related to specific resources, to the editing committee at this juncture. It would be more helpful for us to send them to you, collect your comments, and put it together. If we need to have a review at some subsequent point, we can do that because we're going to need to review it after the map, everything together. If it's helpful to use the editing committee, we'll probably do it at that juncture.
Okay, so should we consider this is only one time that we're going to...
Well, all members will get the whole document to review and prior to the last meeting, but that'll be a lot of pages all at the same time.
And plus, don't hold comments till that point. If there's something we could say now and
yes.
Be an iterative.
Yes.
One of the benefits of the editing committee, I think, was that those of us who reviewed it, the four of us on the committee, in addition to some specific comments, those specific comments led to some style questions that we've raised, and Dante's prepared a list of some style points that hopefully make the document as consistent as possible throughout in word. Not that there won't be wording changes many of us have.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I may ask to be excused for the balance of the meeting.
Sure. You've worked it.
Thank you for working on that.
A lot of typing, I bet.
Well, what are you doing?
All right. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Frank Hannon. I'm from West Milford, and I'm here to talk about the economic viability of the preservation communities. West Milford is 100% in the Highlands Preservation Area, and though I serve on the Board of Adjustment, which means I'm very familiar with a lot of regulations and rules in regard to the Highlands Act, I want to make it clear that I'm speaking today not as an official, but as a private citizen who's concerned about the future of my community and the other Highlands preservation communities. I want to thank the Highland Council members for this opportunity to speak. Recently, I attended the Record newspaper forum with Governor John Corzine. I was privileged to be one of only about 12 people who were able to ask him a question. I asked him the following question. Do you have any plans to compensate the watershed communities through a water surcharge or other means for being the stewards of the state water supplies? His answer was an emphatic yes, which gave me a lot of encouragement. We have many empty stores in town and on Route 23 in our town. Many empty. Some of these have been empty for many years, prime locations. We need help with economic development. I recently came up with an idea over the summer that I presented to our mayor, who presented it along with Councilman Scangarello, presented to Assemblyman Panaccio and DeCroce. They have drafted a bill, A3557. I have copies, many copies for everyone here. It's a very simple bill. It's a one-page bill, not complicated. And its companion bill, S2323, sponsored by Senator Littell. The bill would create a Highlands Enterprise Zone for the six municipalities that are 99% in a preservation area. It would allow those municipalities to be 50% exempt from sales tax, thus allowing them to charge 3.5% sales tax, much like the urban enterprise zones. I hope that this council and also the various people who are representatives of the various freeholder boards on the Highlands Council, that those freeholder boards would also adopt the resolution supporting this bill. I have copies of the bill for everyone, and thank you for your time and consideration, and I hope we can hope we can get this pulled off, because we really need help in the Highlands preservation communities.
Thank you. Sandy Coven.
My name is Ted Coven. I live in Tewksbury Township. I've served on the planning board as mayor and on the township committee for three terms. I've watched for the 44 years that I have lived there a slow and sometimes not so slow development of our township and neighboring townships. I've seen a continuing degradation of our environment. My belief in home rule has been shattered by the obvious failure of our planning and zoning. We need regional zoning in order to protect our water, our environment, and our way of life. To keep going the way we have been is to die by a thousand cuts. I believe the council is moving in the correct direction, has my support, and the support of a large majority of the citizens who care for the future of our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sue Buck.
Hi, Susan Buck from Oxford Township. I can't really comment on the plan today, since there's still no plan, so I guess I'm commenting on the planning process itself, which has given me great cause for concern. Seems that in the very first planning meeting that we had here, the workshop meeting, it became obvious that things weren't going the way I thought they were, and it made me more concerned than I had been in the past. For instance, it seemed that conversations about the planning process itself, what the goals were and what the objectives were never really discussed. The way it was going to be decided was never really discussed. It was kind of chaotic, I think we all agree on that, and we lost some more time in even figuring out how we're going to take all this data, present it, vote on it, and even decide what the goals were. To this day, the goals really haven't been discussed. I hear lots of conversations between council members that lead me to believe that we really don't know. Is the goal a zero tolerance kind of a goal? Do we want zero tolerance for degradation of resources? Or is it the goal to balance some degradation of resources with the economic benefit and cost of the plan? That still doesn't seem to have been addressed, and I don't see how you can ever get through the rest of this process in any kind of a one-month time frame without having already discussed those issues. I'm not sure. I had been under the impression the council itself was going to develop the plan. Somewhere along the line, it became the staff that was developing the plan. I don't see any evidence that the council's been involved in any of the scientific data. I'm beginning to think I read more of it than some of the council members have. There's been no new science released. I read all the stuff. It's nothing new. It's all the things that were in existence already. The Regional Planning Association came out with a lovely little TDR book that probably should have been published by the Highlands Council. It used all the scientific data that you guys are using and that already existed from the DEP and the National Geologic Service and so forth. So I'm concerned that it's impossible to recover from this situation. Granted, I think it's an impossible task because of the legislation itself. I'm very disappointed that there hasn't been more done since we've had all this extra time to try and address it. There's aspects of that legislation that make it impossible to do this job right, and certainly impossible to compensate the landowners, which some people say they want to do and some people don't. But since it's not in the legislation itself, the chances of us getting paid are zero. I've lost my confidence in the ability of the council to produce any kind of an effective master plan at this stage. Without the legislative changes, without the planning process itself being intact and knowing where we're headed, thousands of people have been hurt, growth is rampant in the planning area, and we'll never be able to develop a plan that doesn't do more harm than good.
Before I call the next person, I think we now, with Eric Peterson and Ben Petrano joining us, have enough people to consider at least the October 5th minutes. So pull those back out. And I think we might as well remake the motion. So if someone would like to move those minutes.
Yes, so moved.
Do you have a second?
Yes, sir.
And does anyone have any corrections or changes to the minutes of October 5th? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Abstain.
So, I think that passed.
Janice,
are you here?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Did you vote for the minutes?
I wasn't. You talking about the? I wasn't there for the 12th. So I abstained.
You participated by a teleconference. It says here on October 5th.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were doing the 12th. Yes, then yes. The minutes, sorry.
Okay. There's the headline from this meeting. The minutes passed. Number 5. And we don't have enough people to vote for the number 12 one. Okay.
John, before we go on, a point that Sue raised, some of the things Sue said made me think. We have not settled some policy issues that were raised during our workshop meetings. Where in this revised work plan are we going to do that?
Well, the idea is that we are going to meet November 9th. At 10 o'clock, and then we're looking for a date for one other meeting. And the plan is that we would, at those November 9th and at the other meeting, if we were able to find a date, address the issues that have not been resolved and try to get them on the table and have a discussion of them and have a vote on them. And then the staff would incorporate the results of those votes into the plan we would see November 30th. Elizabeth George Chimera.
Good morning. I'm Elizabeth George Chimera, staff attorney and Highlands Policy Coordinator for the New Jersey Gilberts Association. As the Highlands Council has concluded its work sessions discussing policy areas for the Highlands Regional Master Plan, NJBA wishes to emphasize that the Council has failed to address some important issues. Promotion of brownfields remediation and redevelopment in the Highlands region is both a goal of the Highlands Act and also among the powers, duties, and responsibilities of the Council. It is unclear what specific steps will be taken by the Council to accomplish this goal. Another goal and mandate is to identify areas that may be able to sustain appropriate development, redevelopment, and economic growth. This would also inform the identification of potential TDR receiving areas, which has been deferred to the RMP conformance process. Potential growth area identification was last discussed during the July 27th Highlands Council meeting, at which time it was noted policy criteria must be finalized for identifying redevelopment and growth evaluation area. However, further discussion has not taken place. We also note that the Council has not provided any information as to where housing, development, and workplaces will be promoted in the Highlands region. Looking at the June 2nd status report for developing the RMP, we note the following outstanding important reports: transportation capacity analysis, Regional Growth Redevelopment Design Report, Highlands Growth Capacity, and the Land Use Capability Map Baseline. When would these be discussed by the Council and become available for the public? We remind the Council that the Highlands Act precludes the Council from adopting their RMP until receiving zones and their capacity in the planning area are recommended for the TDR program. Thank you.
Thank you. David Trost.
Good morning. My name is David Trost, and I'm the Director of Planning for Sparta Township. And first of all, I'd like to thank all of you for spending an enormous amount of time. I have been following the minutes online and have been reading quite a few of the draft sections of the plan. However, this is the first meeting I've attended, and I think I chose a good one since I get to talk. In reading some of the draft sections, I'm getting a sense and a sense of real concern that certain actions by other bodies of the state of New Jersey may be compromised, and specifically approved designated centers by the State Planning Commission that are within the planning area of the Highlands area. I think it's the obligation of this council to absolutely make it crystal clear in that plan that those centers are 100% exempt from any Highlands regulations that may come out of this document, with one exception, unless that community buys into the Highlands plan for the planning area. I think that's what the legislation says. If you don't say it clear in the plan, there will be some that will interpret the plan in a way that is inappropriate. Once the cow's out of the barn, you're not getting it back in. I also have concerns, and this is based on over 20 years of planning experience in this great state and also the great state of Colorado, is your schedule and your timetable. You're releasing the plan on November the 30th in the middle of the holiday season. If I was a ill-thinking person, I may say, ooh, that's good. Nobody will comment on the plan. Nobody will be available. Because you want to know something? I don't know about you, but my family means more to me than anything else. Spending time with them, enjoying their company, and doing the religious things that I do, and others do, is more important than this. I don't think you're going to get the appropriate cross-section of public comments that you need. And you should possibly either rethink the schedule or possibly extend it greater than the two-month period to allow people to, first of all, read it, digest it, and then have appropriate time for comment. This is a huge plan. Look how much time you guys have spent grappling with these issues. You're going to give the public 2 months, and then in the middle of the holiday season? That's just not right and not fair. So it comes down to fairness. And I know you guys want to be fair. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. So I plead with you. And the third issue I'd just like to ask a question, and I'm sure Dante can provide it to me later, is I haven't seen anywhere in any of the documentation that I've read who is the responsible licensed New Jersey planner for this document. Because under the law, any planning document must be signed and sealed and authored and reviewed by a licensed professional planner in the state of New Jersey. And I haven't seen any indication. If I've missed it, please, I would love to be stand corrected. Thank you for your time, and look forward to speaking more and reading more and talking with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure. John, I think he raises a good point about the schedule. I don't think the schedule should be finalized until there's a meeting of the Plan Development Committee and the Plan Development Committee review. all these critical elements, re-examine it, and make a recommendation to the council as to what final schedule should be.
Well, the local participation committee is definitely going to meet prior to our next meeting to discuss the schedule in terms of scheduling public hearings. We hadn't had any discussions prior to the last minute of extending the comment period longer, but we can do that. And, I think probably that the local participation committee is the right committee to do it, and then we schedule it. By all the council members.
But the plan development committee is responsible for the plan, and we have not met to review. I mean, we got a staff recommendation with these dates. We have not critically reviewed this plan, this current schedule. And I think we, sitting up here, are ultimately responsible for this, not the staff. And we need to examine it. We need to take responsibility for it. We need to make recommendations on it. And I'm not comfortable with how this has been done.
Okay. We have a plan development meeting.
We'll have a difficult time scheduling. Well,
right.
I know because
right.
of our schedules. But.
Right. I'm sorry to keep jumping back and forth, but I realize we do have enough people to approve or to consider the minutes of October 12th. So you could pull those out, and someone make a motion to approve the minutes of October 12th.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the minutes of October 12th.
Second.
Second.
Okay. Any comments or corrections? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Abstain.
You're here.
Always here.
But you're still abstaining?
I've asked that these minutes be provided to us with enough time to review them. Emailing them Tuesday night at 8:15 did not afford me the time to review these documents before our meeting.
Okay. Consider them a future meeting. Andy Drysdale.
Good morning. My name is Andy Drysdale. Excuse me. I live at 32 East Fox Chase Road in Chester Township. I have been trapped in the preservation area by a politically drawn line. This gives the DEP dictatorial powers over a vast area of northern New Jersey. The DEP cannot even take care of what they already have, as is evidenced by the desire to cut funding at Waterloo Village by $250,000. If that historic village were run properly, it would probably be very profitable. At previous council meetings, there was talk of 600-foot and 1,000-foot buffers and Highlands Police. Clean water, endangered species, and many scenic vistas could all be preserved without harming people with these authoritarian tactics. I believe that people who reside in this area did not vote to be treated in this egregious, heavy-handed, and unnecessary manner. They, as well as many in the planning area, who may soon be affected, should contact as many legislators as they can. There is legislation that has been proposed that would correct many of the flaws in this ill-conceived act. This legislation needs to be supported. The bottom line is that if the state wants to preserve land, they should purchase it at Highlands real market value, pre-Highlands real market value from willing sellers. Thank you.
We now have 22 people signed up to speak. David Piper.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Dave Piper. I'm with the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions, and I'd like to speak with you this morning about a particular type of resource that's present in the Highlands that I don't believe has gotten any particular care or consideration in the planning work that's gone on so far. This is the issue of limestone areas within the Highlands. The widespread presence of limestone in the Highlands has been known for a long time. About 59 of the 88 municipalities have substantial areas of limestone within them. And these areas have had a history in many locations of causing problems during development or due to groundwater contamination resulting from surface activities. Subsidence and sinkhole formation is something that people, for example, in the Phillipsburg area are very familiar with. Groundwater contamination in the Pahatkong Superfund site is another one. The point being that these areas are indeed very sensitive to disturbance by human activities. Interestingly, though, they're also very important from a natural resources planning perspective. We shouldn't look at them as problem areas. We should look at them as potential natural resources for human use and for ecological value. Limestone areas tend to be the most prolific aquifers that are present in the highlands, particularly in areas where they're overlain by sands and gravels from glacial deposits. Those are very small but highly important aquifer areas in the highlands. One example is the Alamatong well field in Morris County and the Flanders well field also in Morris County. Some of the policy issues that come about when we look at the methods of planning that we're using today and have used historically are very interesting with regard to limestone. If we want to avoid development on steep slopes in the highlands, we will tend to push development to the flatter ground. The flatter ground is often underlain by limestone. So we chase them off the ridge and we put them down on the limestone. If we want to avoid wetlands and surface waters in the development process, very interesting to realize that because limestone areas are highly permeable, water moves downward rapidly. Streams and wetlands generally don't develop well on them. So by avoiding wetlands and surface water bodies, we end up with a very interesting process of moving development toward limestone areas where all of the water's in the ground. When we apply the nitrate dilution model, because it's a dilution model, the smaller lots result on the areas with the most groundwater. That's something that is an unanticipated consequence. If you have a very poor aquifer, a ridge line of granite, you'll get very large lots resulting from that applying the nitrate dilution model. If you have a very prolific aquifer, as you do under limestone, you'll get smaller lots. So we run the risk of loading our best aquifers with septic systems today. Most of the planning and preservation area delineations, if you look at them carefully, tend to follow the divide between limestone and Precambrian rock. The planning areas, which were largely agriculturally developed and contain the very best agricultural soils, fall on top of the limestone areas to a large extent. So when we talk about preserving prime farmland, we have a good chance to preserve limestone areas and aquifers. On the other hand, agricultural practices which take place without regard to that resource can negatively impact the groundwater resource under the farming activity. So farming needs to be done in a conscious way that understands the resource constraint. When we apply transportation criteria to planning, proximity to transport, one of the interesting things that happens is that limestone areas are relatively flat, they have gentle relief, and roads and railroads tended to be located there. So when we say we want development near transport, we're likely going to find that we're going to put it on limestone. Stormwater management. We've got a wonderful stormwater program in the state of New Jersey that talks a lot about inducing recharge to deal with stormwater rather than dumping it in streams and rivers. and that's a good thing. But the point is that dumping water onto limestone, which has the potential to collapse, to sinkhole, and to transmit pollutants rapidly downstream, down gradient, needs to be done, again, like agriculture, in a conscious recognition of what that resource really is. So you don't want to recharge large volumes of stormwater into limestone without very careful thought. Another issue is the inadequacy of the RSIS standards on the subject. RSIS 5:21:1.6, Development Over Limestone Geologic Formations, recognizes that this is a serious problem. But interestingly, it defers it to the local level and says, if you'd like to propose an ordinance to regulate limestone, you have to come back to us, and your specific ordinance is, quote, shall be referred to the technical committee and recommended to the Site Improvement Advisory Board for approval. And so protection of limestone on a regional basis is not currently supported by the RSIS rules, although the problem is clearly recognized and the townships and municipalities that contain limestone are clearly indicated in the IRS appendix. We believe that the council should, at a very minimum, prepare a model carbonate geology ordinance, or a limestone protection ordinance, for use during the conformance process. Such an ordinance was prepared back in 1999 with the input of the U.S. Geologic Survey, the New Jersey Geologic Survey, Natural Resources Conservation Service, and I have a copy of that model for you today. Some towns in the Highlands region have adopted this ordinance or versions of the ordinance. It's unclear what those versions look like in a regional sense. So in sum, what we suggest for the council is that the RMP should establish a clear policy that recognizes the critical nature of carbonate rock formations, limestones, dolomites, and marbles, and there is a list of the formations in the model ordinance. Recognizing that these are vital water supplies currently and are certainly future resources for potable water, that they contain some of the most valuable agricultural lands within the Highlands, that they have unique values as scenic resources because they're the low part of the high land. Without that interaction, you have a very difficult ability to preserve scenic quality. And their ecological values in maintenance of stream flows, base flows during low flow conditions. And we would also like that policy to recognize the critical nature of the areas, including their sensitivity to subsidence and collapse, the sensitivity to contamination from surface activities, and contributions to base flows. The carbonate rock areas should be mapped, and they should be shown on the land capability map and classified as critical areas. And finally, requiring the adoption of a model carbonate rock or limestone ordinance during the conformance process and the appropriate modifications of municipal master plans to reflect that fact. Thank you.
Are your comments? Yes. Can you make your comments with us?
Yes.
Thank you. Dave Schultz?
John, this is Michael Salivar. I've joined the call.
Hi, Michael. We are hearing public comment, Michael, and we have approximately 22 people signed up to speak, and David Schultz has just stepped on stage.
Great, thank you.
My name is David Schultz. I have a farm in Lebanon Township, and first I would like to bring to your attention that you have not completed your public review of agricultural sustainability. On September 19th, you stopped on page 5. So this remains incomplete. And I will skip to the glossary. I have a problem with that. The problem being, you attempt to redefine what qualifies for farmland exemption under Active Highlands Regional Farm. You say that means, one, a farm management unit of no less than 5 acres producing agricultural or horticultural products worth $2,500. We all know that the state law is $500 for the first 5 acres. This is no place to redefine state law. I suggest you that you remove this from the glossary and replace it with what is the state law. I have here from the state plan, statewide policy number one, equity. State policy number one, equity. It is the position of the State Planning Commission that the basic policy and implementation of the state plan is to achieve the public interest goals of the State Planning Act while protecting and maintaining the equity of all citizens. It goes on. My question is this still a statewide policy plan? And does it apply to what is now the colony called the Highlands? I'd like an answer for that question when you can get it to me. Also, I have here in from the October 21st magazine, The Economist, a list of return on equity calculations. It includes the United States, Europe, China, and Japan. In the United States, the return on equity for a business, and I presume that agriculture is still considered a business, not a vestige for the amusement of the other people who live on an acre or two. Let me continue on that assumption. The average return on equity in the United States is 17%. And if you're a business, you have the right to exercise options. You don't have to continue to make shoes if shoes no longer are profitable. You can make transistors if you're so inclined. In any case, whatever you do, the average return on equity is 17%. My options have been removed by this act. I want to be paid for my options. I want to be paid at the rate of 17%. Thank you.
Julia Summers.
I'm Julia Summers. I'm the Executive Director of the New Jersey Highlands Coalition. And we want to tell you that we indeed very much support the process that you are going through and the work that you are doing. We strongly believe that only a regional plan can ensure the future growth of Northern New Jersey and the protection of the resources of Northern New Jersey. We are concerned, however, that the plan that you are working to put together I want to remind you that the language is protect, enhance, and restore. And I also just wanted also to remind you of a statistic that I came across yesterday from the USGS, which I think is startling, but it's a validation of the importance of what you are doing. 64% of the population of New Jersey receives some or all of its water from the New Jersey Highlands. So the work that you are doing is very important for the state. And it really is all about the water. It's the fuel for the engine that drives our economy as well as the basis for this plan. As we look at water availability and capacity, there are certain things that we need to take into account. We must look at the long-term needs of the entire region. That includes that part that the Highlands provides water for, and the state. And we need to adhere to the precautionary principle. Where there is no clear scientific data, the Council must base their decision-making on the most protective standards available. The plan itself has to be strategic in order to develop a hierarchical system of where the water within the region can go for development. Will it go for a golf course or a hospital, a school or a subdivision? redevelopment in Patterson and Phillipsburg, or new development in Ringwood and Rockaway? These are important questions that need to be answered as part of this plan. Tough decisions need to be made on who gets the water. The Act itself requires us to look at secondary and cumulative impacts and to restore, enhance, and protect the waters of the Highlands. The water capacity and availability analysis must reflect these guiding principles. When we calculate water availability in the Highlands region, we must also look at growth outside of the Highlands and the demand for water that this growth will generate. As part of that increasing demand for Highlands water, when I talk about that, City of Newark just came out with a study which talks about the fact that it anticipates its population growing, hopes its population will grow, by at least 100,000 in the next few years. That's nearly 10 million gallons of water just per day for that population growth. I'm not sure that that's in the Pequannock watershed today. As part of the increasing demand for Highlands water, we also have to consider the potential loss of water supplies in regions outside the Highlands. In the last 15 years, 5 water supply reservoirs in central New Jersey have closed due to pollution. Hallidon, East Orange, Orange, Lawrence Brook, and Clark reservoirs. The water supply that was lost from those reservoirs has been made up through Highlands water. In the last 20 years, hundreds of wells in Union, Essex, Bergen, Passaic, and Middlesex counties have also closed due to pollution. In virtually every case, that water has also been replaced by water from the Highlands region. When looking at potential water withdrawals for new development above our reservoirs, we have to make sure that those withdrawals will not deplete important stream flows into our reservoirs. We also have to look at the impact of development in the Highlands and water supply intakes that are just outside the Highlands, especially in Bridgewater, Two Bridges, and Little Falls. As we look at development in basins that currently are not used for water supply outside of the Highlands, we have to factor in how much water may be needed in the future for developments outside of that basin. For example, the Musconetcong River water currently doesn't get transferred out of the basin except during rare droughts. It is possible that this river may become more of a water supply source in the future, with the potential need to transfer water from this basin in order to make up for water deficits. The Council must take into consideration the increase of impervious cover, soil compaction, the loss of forest cover, and the loss of aquifer recharge in any water capacity analysis. They must not only look at base flow. And just as important, even though there isn't a huge amount of it, we have to protect our deep aquifer recharge. We need to also prioritize sites for preservation. And I'm just curious, I'm assuming that this will come from the land use capability map. Where there is no clear scientific data, the Council must use the precautionary principle and base their decision-making on the most protective standards available. We are at a most critical time in development of the plan, and water is the most crucial issue when it comes to the Highlands plan itself. If information is missing, it is better to err on the side of caution. If we overestimate the amount of water that we have, it will lead to more overdevelopment and further depletion of our water resources. The Highlands Act will be a failure, and we will not have water for future generations. Finally, we need to work together to ensure the renewal of the Garden State Preservation Trust next year with a substantial commitment of funds to Highlands protection. This is a really serious issue because I can assure you that there are elements within, there are people who advise the governor that the state can't afford to renew the Garden State Preservation Trust, and we are all going to have to work together to make sure that it is both renewed and that there is a commitment of funding to the Highlands to make this plan work and to make it fair. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Shaw.
Good morning. Steve Shaw, I'm special counsel in Warren and Hunterdon County. I wanted to follow up today on the status of the interagency agreement between COA, the DEP, Office of Smart Growth. We had met with select members of the council and staff, I believe it was back in April, and it addressed what we believe is a critical interplay in the current legislation and adverse impacts which will occur if there is not such an agreement in place. Very simply, the State Planning Commission is supposed to adopt an amendment of its plan to incorporate the Highlands Master Plan provision. As a result, any municipality in the planning area is going to be required in order to get any kind of approval from the State Planning Commission to comply with the master plan and bring themselves into conformity with it. So there is an inherent involuntary aspect to the approval process. There is also a potential impact from COA obligations as a result of this, particularly any municipality which is a receiving area would by definition be receiving growth, receiving additional COA responsibilities. And we did meet with, again, representatives of the council, and we're under the impression that this issue would be addressed prior to the adoption of the master plan. Obviously, it was our contemplation that this was going to be done back in June, but in any event, we would like to have a response as to the status of any interagency agreement and basically where it's at. Thank you.
There's no interagency agreement that's been brought to the council so far. The Highlands, the council staff and COA staff are meeting tomorrow, as it happens, to discuss some of the issues of our event.
Mr. Chairman, I do think that there's an issue that we really should check out, and that is what he's implying is that, you know, unless a town goes along with the RNP and in the conformance process, that they can't get participate in the state plan acceptance process. So
we've discussed this. I remember January of 2005. I know I've brought this point up a number of times, and I'm going to raise this point at every single council meeting from today forward till we get a resolution of this matter. This is ridiculous that it's gone on this long, and we still haven't had anything brought to the council. But I urge you to move forward on this. This has critical implications. We missed our second deadline, and we still don't have this resolved with the other state agencies. We need to get this done.
On the other hand, I have to assume that there is not a conflict because the Act clearly says that conformance with the state, with the RMP will be completely voluntary on the part of towns and the planning area. So I just think that we should make it clear and document.
Okay. Maybe this is a separation of the two.
Absolutely. And maybe this goes back to a point I brought up at our very first council meeting, that there's an interaction between this Act and regulations. And we need to recognize that, and we need to either assert our authority or we need to some sort of agreement, because it has dire implications for municipalities who get caught in the middle of it.
I think that we're all operating on the fact that this will be a voluntary process on the part of our municipalities. So we just want to make sure that we get the proper documentation clarifying this.
And excuse me, I just wanted to restate if I could that what the hook really is in terms of COA,
yes,
is that if you have a municipality is required to have approval of the State Plan Commission in order to have continuing substantive certification. If a municipality does not bring itself into conformity with that plan, it loses any COA protections. It also loses ability to get grants and other benefits. So, thank you.
And the voluntary nature becomes between choosing between conforming with dictated state agency requirements for development or becoming subject to a builder's remedy. And I maintain that that's not voluntary. That's choosing between two even.
Mr.
Goodwoman, I do recall that better than a year ago,
that myself, former council member Spinelli, and I believe council member Kobach, we went down a trip and sat with the State Planning Commission. And I clearly remember leaving there that day with the understanding that there was going to be some arrangement and some dialogue with these interagency agreements, and they were going to be forthcoming, and that's better than a year ago. And I think Mr. Shule raises a very valid point. Those agreements are critical to moving forward with the regional master plan. So I would hope that we can fast track that and get some type of resolution.
Mr. Chairman, before we complete our day's activities, could we get our Mr. Borden to please bring us up to date as to whether or not he's heard anything?
We do have at least 12 more people who'd like to speak.
The other state agencies.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. But as I said, there is a meeting tomorrow. COA staff and Highlands Council staff,
is a major, but it's a small part of it. There's the State Planning Commission agreement, as well as Justice Smart Growth, so numerous interagency agreements need to be made.
Phyllis Hartman?
Captain.
I'm sorry.
My name is Phyllis Hampman, and I have been the land use administrator in Rockaway Township since 1984. I would like to thank Mr. Trost and Mr. Shaw for their comments, because they're to the point of the direction that I want to go in. I take no position as to what you are doing in terms of science or regulations or... That's not my function in town when I deal with the public, with developers, with other agencies that are environmental agencies, all aspects of people and state. The confusion, I'm often the grief messenger who brings the bad news, and I would like to just reiterate or say for the first time, when it gets down to the local level, everybody goes like this. They point to another agency that you have to get exemption from or sign off from or whatever. There has to be a very, very clear, easily understood direction that towns are going to follow when they enforce and implement the policies that you are establishing when it percolates down. When we talk to, say, a large developer like Hovnanian with a tremendous number of attorneys and staff, even if they have better information than we do at the local level, we still need the mandate or the explanation, the clear order of how we do things from the legislating agency. And we need to rely on that, and it has to make sense. And we cannot put our towns and our own local agencies in some kind of jeopardy. Specifically, again, COA, I'm also the housing officer and the housing liaison for Rockaway. And the directions that we're going in are opposite frequently. The instructions we're getting conflict. So that no matter what the scientific specifics are of the plan that you adopt, ultimately, getting it used properly at the local level, if you can have it, but if it's locked away in a drawer and unenforceable, it's not going to do anybody any good. So I urge you, please, to clear up all of these outstanding issues of multiple agencies that need to understand who has precedence and whose guidelines rule. Otherwise, nobody, how do we deal with fish and wildlife regulations? Where does that fit in? I mean, that comes up all the time. Where is Fish and Wildlife and DEP? You have different standards from different agencies, and the more layers you have, it's like an onion. It's impossible to deal with locally. And the people who are hurt the most are not the big groups that have staffs of multiple attorneys, because they can work their way through it and they have the funding. It's the local landowners. It's the people who want to add a small addition to their house or something. I've seen people who've lost mortgage commitments, who've had all kinds of delays, not because they're necessarily waiting for an exemption, but because within the same town, different department heads have different spins on who's supposed to answer the question, and that's unacceptable. So I urge you, please, to resolve those matters in the same time frame that you resolve completing your document. Thank you.
Thank you.
Helen Heinrich.
Good morning. Helen Heinrich, representing New Jersey Farm Bureau, along with Nicole Goger. First of all, I'd like to give Dante a summary of...
Just a minute. I'd just like to say to people in the public, when you whisper to each other, we hear every word you're saying. So don't hesitate to whisper. Just don't.
Do they hear us when we whisper?
I don't think so.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for pausing to have this session of public comment. At the Charette, as part of the land use group, we were really urging the council to have sort of an interim review and chance for the public to have a look at what you're thinking about and to give you some feedback before you end up with your final draft and things get set in stone. So thank you very much for this. I think it's very welcome to all of us, and I hope it's instructive to you all. What we put together is just a list of all the various comments that Farm Bureau is prepared to send to all of you, and I hope you've had a chance to look at them and read them. And I'm wondering if any of you have any questions about anything that we've sent?
This is not the time for that.
We'd be happy to talk with anybody that's got any questions. The one element, the probably most important element to agriculture that's not on there is the ag sustainable sustainability element. And we would really request that this come back before it's in its final form for discussion, as I believe Sue Buck mentioned. We'd like to see, maybe at the next meeting perhaps, or at least release it to the public so that we can take a look at it, and so can you. And I wonder if, I keep thinking that if you all in particular had a chance to see what the map looks like, and perhaps you have, I don't know. It seems like all these questions of how to do balance and what kind of standards and how strict should we get could be put into a better perspective if we all, and you all in particular, saw the map. And I was hoping that if the Plan Development Committee does meet, that starting with the map would be a very good plan. So thank you very much. We would be happy to answer any questions that or need for more information that anybody might have. Thank you.
Thank you. William Hanachewski.
Good morning. My name is Bill Hanachewski. I'm a resident of Clinton Township, and I happen to live in the Highlands Preservation Area. And I do strongly support the Highlands Act and the work of the council. I'm a licensed professional planner in the state of New Jersey, and I'm also an environmental scientist. I've spent the last 36 years of my career in environmental protection and land use planning. And in that time, I have collected and analyzed thousands of samples of soil sediments, water and fish from Cape May to Sussex County. I have sampled some of the most toxic and contaminated sites in the state, and I've seen firsthand what our current planning practices have wrought. And I tell you, it's not a pretty picture. In spite of our best management practices, and the problem is our site-by-site design and approval process, and I'll give you an example. Our stormwater BMPs, when you look at what's downstream of these particularly dry extended detention basins, you see a quiescent stream coming before the outfall, maybe 2 or 3 feet wide. And when you look down below them, you see a stream that's been widened by 30 or 40 feet. You see sediment bars accumulating, and you see a stream being removed for habitat for fish and other wildlife. There's been some question about the scientific data that's being used in the formulation of the Highlands Master Plan. I'm often questioned whether or not it's satisfactory and reliable. And I tell you, of course it is. Is it perfect? No. In spite of our 36 years of intense collection, we still have gaps in our knowledge simply due to the complex nature and interactions of our ecological infrastructure, and I term that our life-supporting infrastructure. Do we know more today than our ancestors did 100 years ago, who left us with a $1 trillion bill of contaminated streams, lakes, groundwater, soils, and sediment? Of course, we need not prove our case beyond a reasonable doubt, but rather by a preponderance of the evidence. And the evidence says we need a regional master plan, not only in the Highlands region, but we also need one for the state of New Jersey. The Highlands Act is a very good piece of legislation, and the work of the Highlands Council and DEP should be commended. It's not an easy job that you've been given. I'll give you one piece of advice, if I can, and that would be to keep it simple. I also ask that you remember that you have a fiduciary responsibility to those who are here today, but also about generations to come. The population of the United States just turned over 300 million people. New Jersey expects approximately 1 million more residents by the year 2020. There has been some concern about economics, and to some it is the only concern. It simply cannot be all about economics. Without a sufficient quantity and quality of water, there can be no industry, no business, no farming, and certainly no quality of life, despite how much we irrigate the land with dollars. And I thank you very much. And I will leave some of my comments here with the council.
Thank you. Mayor Dick Hudson.
Dick Hudson, Mayor Burville, Hancock. I was here once before, well, I've been here lots of times, but I spoke once before to you about areas that were included in the Highlands in a very unscientific way. There was no science in drawing those lines. It was not based on real water supply. And in our town, the line could have as easily been drawn along a railroad as along a highway. It was drawn along a highway. On the other hand, there's an area near a pond which has freshwater jellyfish, which was left out. And so there should be an act created that would allow the council to do in and outs, not just opt-ins, but trades, where especially near borders, where that comes up. But that's not my main reason for being here today. My involvement with government and holding one office or another goes back to 1971, not 1871, as some might suspect, except for about 2 years of my life. And so I've been to lots of meetings, and what I've come away with from your meetings of late is fear. When the act was put forward, there were promises that were made to elected officials, to the population in general, that things were off limits, so to speak. They were promised town centers were sacrosanct and sewer areas. And what's come forward from some of you, especially in recent weeks, it gives me fear that somehow or other they're going to be stripped away. And you're talking about communities that base their futures of their residents and lots, and in our case, $55 million worth of sewer money, and we're only 45% done. But what's coming forward gives me the fear that you're going to somehow upset designated town centers, which we happen to have, approved sewer areas, which we also happen to have, and some of us would like to see in writing that that's not going to happen. Earlier, the point was raised about some interactions between committees that are not specific, and they're not signed off on, so to speak. Well, this is one that bothers, I'm sure, elected officials in a lot of communities. Most certainly I know in Sussex County. So we would ask then, we will probably do a resolution asking specifically what I just said the next time the governing body meets. that consideration be given, not just for assurances, which I know are all well-meaning and intended, but that it be in writing so that the communities will have something to hang their hat on, so to speak, and not casting aspersions on your word. But it is nice to have things in writing, isn't it? Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think Mr. Charleston and Mayor Hudson raised a very valid point, and it not only, I'm sure, affects the municipalities in Sussex County, but throughout the entire region. And I think there were valid questions that were asked quite some time ago, because I think also Mr. Charleston mentioned the word fairness. Those municipalities follow a process, many years of good planning. They have a lot of dollars and a lot of their community tax dollars invested in getting those approved centers and those designated sewer areas. Those particular municipalities, and not only in Sussex, there's any other center designations throughout the Highlands region, that is the lifeblood to those communities' survival. And I don't really think it's asking much that they wait for this plan to be rolled out. I think that's something that can be given to them as they've requested in writing, so that they know where they can move from this point going forward. I think it's high tide that we start to deliver some of these very basic answers to these folks so that they can continue to move forward with their existence in their communities.
Diane Nelson.
Good morning. My name is Diane Nelson. For many years, I've been involved in local government as a volunteer in various capacities, and also I've been involved with the Upper Rockaway River Watershed Association. I want to compliment the council on making it available to the public through your website the many reports from the staff and the recommendations that have been submitted. Many of us are very anxious that this draft regional management plan be released without delay. We urge you, at least I urge you, please do not delay again. My personal hope is that in the future, this plan will incorporate studies that have informed, that have provided the backbone of many local planning efforts. In the case of the Upper Rockaway River Watershed, there is a valuable storehouse of information relating to aquifer delineation and water supply, as well as water quality recommendations. I'd like to cite a few. A report was prepared by the Morris County Park Commission and submitted to the state and local towns entitled The Farney Highlands Watershed, a plan to protect water supplies and to preserve forests. I hope your staff has a copy of this plan. In addition, in 1978 and 1979, five towns cooperated in contracting for experts to investigate groundwater and hydrology in the Rockaway Aquifer. Two reports were produced which delineated the prime aquifer areas and made recommendations to preserve water quality through open space acquisition and zoning. A few years earlier, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, through experts in hydrology and land use planning, produced extensive documentation on the limits of this region's water resources to serve new growth. As a result of these studies, the Regional Water Sewerage Authority was forced to reduce its proposed plant size and piping network. This information is all available. Another study was sponsored by the Upper Rockaway River Watershed Association and provided an expert analysis of the ecodynamics of the Rockaway River. This led to the upgrading of water quality classifications for portions of the watershed. Unfortunately, in recent years, the DEP has failed to follow through with its promise to classify the entire Upper Rockaway River as Category 1. It certainly qualifies for this designation. About 20 years ago, the Watershed Association assembled the necessary documentation to support the US EPA's designation in 1984 of the watershed, its aquifer, and its stream source zones as a sole source aquifer under the Clean Water Act. Currently, the Rockaway River Cabinet, which is a group of cooperating municipalities, has an ongoing water quality sampling program through a scientist with Drew University. In addition, the cabinet, with the help of Andrew Pogan Associates and Cahill Associates, have produced a report entitled The Rockaway River Sustainable Watershed Management Plan. This is a really a valuable document, which I hope you people will obtain if you have not already obtained it. In my own municipality, we've produced an informative environmental resource inventory. So much has been done. I hope the council will take advantage of this valuable database. One final comment. The Upper Rockaway River watershed should be priority for protection. Its surface waters feed the Jersey City Reservoir. Local water supplies are limited to wells and one small reservoir owned by the town of Boonton. There are no excess waters to plan for more growth. This was demonstrated recently by the need to find water outside of the basin for a proposed new development at the juncture of Route 80 and Route 15, where groundwater has been contaminated by disposals at Picatinny Arsenal. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Joan Fisher?
Good morning. I'm Joan Fisher. I'm the executive director of the Great Swamp Watershed Association. I'm here today to say thank you to all of you on the council and certainly to the staff for the monumental number of hours of work that you've put in establishing the scientific basis for and the regulatory framework for your regional master plan. It was a huge task to be done in a short period of time. The importance of the regional approach is apparent now to nearly everyone, and the Great Swamp Watershed Association would like to say thank you and to voice our continuing support for your efforts. However, there's always a however.
Sorry,
it's just my nature. Once it is released and enacted, it will only have a snowball's chance of success if it is also adequately funded for implementation and preservation and acquisition. In addition, it must be properly, the public and the municipalities who are affected must be properly educated as to the benefits and the burdens of the plan and how they can best utilize it as a tool that will make their home rule more effective in preserving their assets rather than as a threat to their home rule. That goes back to what has been said by prior comments about simplicity and about getting various agencies on board so the left hand does know what the right hand is doing, even if it doesn't like it. In addition, the council must be willing to make both pragmatic and sometimes difficult choices in enforcing the plan. Water is our most precious resource now, and it will potentially be more precious and more rare someday than oil. It's ours, it's here, it's under our feet, not in a foreign country. The benefits of protecting it are felt in a huge region, and the consequences of failure to do so will also be felt. Water doesn't adhere to municipal or political boundaries, and I know that this council will not be bound by those limitations either. And so again, I would like to say on behalf of the Great Swamp Watershed Association, thank you for enacting, for drafting, for providing the support for a regional master plan that, with proper funding and education, and a pragmatic and strong council, should go far to preserving and protecting and perhaps even improving our valuable water resources. Thanks.
Thank you. Lorraine Caruso? Uh,
Lorraine Caruso, 5 Elizabeth Way, Boonton Township. I appeared before you early on last year. For the past 40 years, I've been involved in the environmental community, subsidizing my volunteerism by teaching part-time at area colleges in biology and environmental science. Mr. Drysdale said people care about environmental issues and their own personal properties, and he resents the intrusion of statewide planning into what he regards as personal responsibility. Would that Mr. Drysdale's comments were universally true, but sadly they are not. In most cases, unfortunately, through my years of volunteerism, I found a great deal of unconcern about individuals' caretaking of property, especially when it comes to sensitive properties. Dave Pfeiffer commented on limestone in his section of the Highlands and how pervious it is to contamination and how development gets channeled into these areas because they're generally flatter than the others. I might point to my section of the Highlands where the exact same comments might be applied to glacial till. Route 80 and Route 46 and the most intense development through the center of Morris County is along that transportation corridor, which happens to have the richest supply of groundwater resources in the county, upon which most municipalities depend. Glacial till was deposited there 10,000 years ago when the glaciers retreated. In many cases, in my own former town of Denville, it's over 200 feet thick in certain areas, a potential wonderful source of water. And when I asked the town to save that area from development, they refused. I asked the county to take charge of that particular part of the township adjacent to the Rockaway River, where we knew from Garrity and Miller studies that the Rockaway River Association performed that the glacial till was in excess of 200 feet deep and a potential fantastic water supply. The county refused to try and protect it. Just as important possibly as a groundwater well water supply is the Alamatong Reservoir out in the western part of the county. Ultimately, what happened to it is that it has a parking lot on top of it now. It is completely covered in macadam for the adjacent St. Clair's Hospital. The consultant said that there would be grease traps put in to collect the oil and grease from the cars. And, of course, the town approved readily because the hospital is such a big economic influence in our town. Several years ago, when the town was looking for water because of a drought, I suggested that they tap the groundwater underneath the parking lot, and the trite comment I got was that it's contaminated. I said, but you said that this was not going to become contaminated, that you had insurance. The point is that what gets said before a planning board by a potential developer is what the planning board people want to hear, not what actually happens 10 years later. Okay, and there is a definite need for regional planning. We know that what we ultimately have to do is regulate the carrying capacity of our population so that we stay within our available resources. We know that civilizations collapse when they run out of water and no amount of name-calling, finger-pointing, prayers, or sacrifices to the gods of rain will solve what is essentially an economic and ecological problem of apportioning resources. And this is a planning issue. Therefore, you have a tremendous responsibility on your shoulders, and I ask you to stay the course. As for me, being a botanist, many of you say it's about the water. I say it's about the forest. We can denude all of our forests in this area completely of trees and have a lot more water. That's not the issue, is it? The real issue is maintaining water quality. We know that forests regulate our local and regional climate. We know that they regulate evapotranspiration and regional rainfall. We get 2 inches of rain more a year, 2 to 8 inches in the highlands of New Jersey. Many climatologists think it's just because of what they call the orographic effect, that there are mountains and that causes the clouds to drop their rain. Botanists know that trees play a big role in maintaining that edge. If our reservoirs in times of drought have 2 to 8 inches of rainfall less, where will we be with providing water to 8 million people? That's the issue. The issue of water supply is intricately hinged on the issue of maintaining forest resources. And that means spacing ourselves out so that we have massive forested areas to protect our water supply. That we also know that trees regulate CO2 and global warming. We know they regulate runoff of nutrients, siltation into streams, and flooding. We know all that, yet we blithely go around ignoring the trees because we're so interested in the water. We can't. They're part and parcel. And if we have a lot of trees, we can't have a lot of houses. It's as simple as that, and you have a choice. Down in Brazil, where they have done regional modeling of the rainforest in Brazil, where there has been massive deforestation, they have found out what we suspect as botanists is true. As you deforest an area and turn it into grassland to raise beef, you get less rainfall. Our prairies in the Midwest have less rainfall, grasslands get less rainfall, etc. So as we turn our forests into suburban lawns and lawns around massive factories and industrial complexes and office buildings, we are reducing the amount of evapotranspiration into the air. This is not just a local issue. It is an issue where we are faced with the responsibility of saving the last forest in our megalopolis. It's, to me, that's my purview, and that's why I set out more than 20 years ago to try and save it. Okay?
Wilma Frey?
Hi, my name is Wilma Frey, and I'm speaking on behalf of New Jersey Conservation Foundation. Previous statements by Julia Summers and Lorraine Caruso don't leave me a lot left to say, but I will say New Jersey Conservation Foundation has recognized the importance of this Highlands region for over 20 years. We worked to help found the Highlands Coalition back in 1988 and have worked since then to try to develop measures to protect the region. We support the Council's efforts to do the regional plan. We strongly support the Highlands Act. It is a very good act, and there's a lot of good meat in it. We support your efforts to develop the regional master plan, and we are assuming that the regional master plan efforts are never going to forget that water protection at both the surface and the groundwater must form the foundation and the underpinning of this plan. The water supply was the basic reason that the Act passed the legislature. The legislature recognized the critical nature of this resource, and previous speakers have commented on how important this is, and that this means not only the resource for the people who live in the Highlands, but the people who live outside the Highlands and depend on this resource, and how the number of those people outside the Highlands is continuing to grow. Therefore, as has been said before, we urge you to employ the precautionary principle, and that it is critical that this plan take into account the possible future growth, and that the water supply not be allocated beyond its capacity. In order to do this, protecting, restoring, and enhancing the drinking water resources, the forest lands, as Lorraine has said, are absolutely crucial, the wetlands as well, and farmlands, all the lands that are not built upon and do not have impervious cover over them, are critical. The two go together. You cannot talk about water without talking about protection of forests. It was clear when the Act passed that the legislature recognized that the protection of this resource on which over half the population of New Jersey depends would not, could not be done by municipalities alone. It must be done on a regional basis, and it is clear that this plan, therefore, cannot be business as usual. That was the reason the Act was passed. So it can't be done by municipalities alone, and it can also not be done by uncoordinated agencies. And the responsibility and the opportunity of the council is to make a plan that serves the region, that serves the people of New Jersey, that pulls together the various agency efforts, and save this water and the region for the people of the future. Thank you very much.
Robert Fry.
I'm Robert Fry. My family has been farming in a conscious way the limestone fields in the Pohackan Valley for 2.5 centuries. And we have probably already been more adversely affected by the Highlands Act than anyone else here in this room. And I wonder if the grandfathered exceptions in the Act die when this grandfather dies. I would request a straight answer on this.
Jeff Tittle.
I want to thank you for having this opportunity today to speak, because those who know me know that, you know, when you're having all those other meetings, I have to sit there quietly and listen, kind of drive someone like me a little nuts, so bear with me a second. There are a lot of different issues to talk about, and I'll try to be brief because I know you have a lot to do, and I also want to thank you for all your work. I wanted to start off by saying that some days, you know, I would feel a little bit like the old line of General Patton, where he was asked if he was caught between the Russians and Germans, what would he do? And he said, shoot in both directions. And some days I do that, but today I'm really here to say that we believe that having this time out now and taking a little extra time to try to get the plan right is important. That this next month, and hopefully we'll be done in the month, and for all of us who've worked for so long and sacrificed for so long in the Highlands, I don't mind missing some afternoon with some of my family to come to a Highlands meeting, because I think it's so critical for this region, even if we have to do things during the holidays to get them done, because we're at a critical time and we can't go back. You know, every day we lose hundreds of acres within the Highlands region to development, and you can't put it back in the bottle, and we need a regional master plan in order to help steer appropriate growth and to make sure we do things right, that we have appropriate carrying capacity, that we are looking at the future needs of the people within the Highlands region and the state of New Jersey, because nothing is more critical. Our three major industries in the state rely on this Highlands water: food processing, pharmaceutical, and tourism. And without that, we have no lifeblood. The governor talks about economic growth and economic development. We cannot have it without water. But I wanted to first address the issue of equity. As someone who is at least three generations property owner in the Highlands, we believe that this act actually helps protect our equity. For my neighbors in my side of Ringwood have always believed that the biggest threat to the property and our investment in our homes was unplanned growth and development around us that will rob our homes of its value. I used to watch, as I go jogging down some of the roads near me, every time a new subdivision went in, those older homes that were near the roads had to go out and get new wells to be put in. We've watched, when I sat on the planning board, time and time again, after development went in, and we tried to hold their feet to the fire and make them do BMPs and everything else, watching neighborhoods down below get flooded, or watching septic coming out of the side of a mountain, or septic tanks failing on Brent, septic fields failing on new homes because they were put in the wrong place because the state never did a proper job in regulating septic. And that really would why we have this act. It's because it's to make up for the mistakes of the past. The failure of New Jersey to adequately protect its most cherished resource, which is water supply. The fact that so many streams in the Highlands are already impaired for pollution because of unplanned or wrongly planned growth and development. And permitting systems that were more about pushing out permits maybe takes too long, but eventually you would get your permit, as I always say, the Department of Eventual Permits, than it was about taking a holistic look at the impact of that development. Stream encroachment only looked at should you put in a bridge or a box culvert. They didn't look at should you put a bridge across the stream in this place next to a reservoir. They never looked at what's the impact to the forest or the endangered species. That's the problem. We have compartmentalized everything for so long and that we've missed the bigger picture. You know, the old saying, we can't see the forest for the trees. That's what we're doing. And we're doing it now in some ways with the plan because we need to step back and take the overview. Why are we here and why are we doing the work? And the reason is that we have to treat this region as a whole. There is no separation between the planning area and the preservation area. They are one. It's the same forest on one side of the line or the other. And that's really the charge that you have when you do this plan, is to, as someone would say, be blind to the line, because there are those interconnects between neighborhoods, between forests, between ecosystems within the Highlands. And when you look to do this plan, you have to remember that you are making up for the mistakes of the past. And some of the things I heard today about the state plan and centers and grandfathering this and grandfathering that, there was never any environmental analysis done when they passed the centers. There was never any environmental analysis done when we did our sewer service areas. Most of the sewer service areas that are in the Highlands were done based on grants from the Department of Health back in the 60s and early 70s when we were going to build massive regional sewer plants that never got built because many of the towns did not want the growth that came with them or could not afford to build those kinds of facilities. Especially when you look at, you know, in places like Ringwood, where it's supposed to be the giant Wanacue Valley Regional, you know, Ringwood was slated based on local zoning back in the 50s and 60s to have more industry than the Ruhr Valley. Literally 50 million square feet of industry on the banks of our reservoir. We still have an industrial area on the banks of our reservoir. It's ludicrous. One of the most beautiful views in the entire country looking down the Wanacue Reservoir, and our town zoned it for a light industry. It makes no sense. Because those were the mistakes that we did make in the past. We have centers that are designated in the Highlands, not because of planning, not because of capacity analysis, because of a budget vote for a budget 3 years ago when the governor needed to get a vote. That was the deal to get one of the bills out of committee to designate certain centers. That's not planning. That's not environmental protection. And that's not capacity-based. When we look at water availability, we have to make sure that we take the most conservative estimates out there. Because in decades from now, we may have water on paper, but we may not have it coming out of our faucets. We have to look at low-flow conditions, and we have to look at peak demand. We have to look not only at the drought of record of 64 or at 99, but what the impacts are since then because of impervious cover and development. We need to look at evaporation off of our reservoirs, and we need to look at the different types of depletive uses that are going on within the region. You're going to have to make some very tough decisions. That this law gives you lots of power when it comes to developing this plan. But sometimes those things that are going to be led to you by science and by capacity analysis may say that this area cannot have growth because it's already exceeded capacity. Or this area, if we allow a certain amount of growth here, there may not be future water to be taken to other areas that may need it. You're going to have to make those decisions. This is not going to be easy because, quite frankly, for so many years, we fall victim to local, parochial, and special interests when it comes to planning land use and environmental protection. And your job is to see beyond that, to look at that big picture, to see the forest and the trees, not just one or the other. We believe quite strongly that this plan is not going to be about triangulation, saying, well, the environmentalists don't like it and the builders don't like it, so we're doing the right thing. No, the right thing is to follow the law and to make sure that you are strong in backing up your decisions, but also make sure that the right decisions, which are protecting that water supply and bringing regional planning to this area that is so desperately needed. And that's really what your charge is. We are here really because the future of New Jersey depends on your actions. The state cannot survive if we keep going the way we're doing. And just because a mayor somewhere might get angry or some builder somewhere might get angry, that's not a reason not to do your job. And each one of you on the council, we need to work together and not pull apart. I've seen too much factionalization where some people think that this plan is about giving waivers and variances. It's not. It's about holding firm that law and protecting the people who live in the Highlands. And protecting the people that live in the Highlands is protecting their quality of life and their water supply. Your charge is also to make sure that you protect the future of New Jersey, our economic growth. It is more important than anything else that we have in the state. We will not be able to have a balanced budget in the future if we don't have a balanced supply of water. And I just want to end with that, because I really appreciate the work you're doing. But you got to get it done, and you got to get it done right.
Thank you. Scott Olson.
It's good to see your faces instead of the backs of your heads again. My name is Scott Olson. I'm from Byram Township, and I think the headline possibly in newspapers is going to be "Environmentalist Agrees with Sue Buck." I actually share her concerns that there have been some elements that haven't been addressed as far as your regional master plan, and one of those is a transportation capacity analysis. So I'm here again today to update you on the status of Route 206 in Byram Township. As you're all aware, I've been a vocal opponent to the proposed widening of this two-lane road to five lanes. When the DOT filed for Highlands exemption a year ago, I submitted lengthy comments to the DEP in opposition to what was being called a roadway repair and rehabilitation project. And I've attached a copy of those comments to the comments I've given you today. The DEP rendered a decision on this application in August, and guess what? I was right. This is not a repair and rehabilitation project in the DEP's mind either, as they found it to be a widening to increase capacity and denied the exemption. Big victory for the little guy, right? I wish that were the case. In the very next paragraph of their denial letter, the DEP found an exemption for which the DOT did not even apply. They labeled it a safety project and bicycle and pedestrian facility by a state agency. Let me tell you that this is a huge stretch of the imagination. This project, which has until now been labeled a repair or congestion relief project by the DOT, is not a safety project. This stretch of roadway does not show up on any listing of pedestrian safety or accident-prone roadways, and only the bicycle or pedestrian facilities in the project that are being added are sidewalks along the side of the soon-to-be five-lane road. Does the DOT need to increase footprint and double capacity to install sidewalks for the sake of improved pedestrian safety? To make matters worse, there are areas of wetland encroachment and disturbance from this project, as well as two other areas in Byram Township, which require mitigation. Just last month, the DEP and DOT announced that they found a place to do this mitigation in Pittsgrove, New Jersey, Salem County. There are areas in need of mitigation within a half mile of the proposed project on the same waterway in the same watershed, yet they've outsourced this mitigation to South Jersey. I applaud all of you for the wonderful job you've been doing and the progress you've been making towards a regional master plan. While you've been engaged in planning to preserve the natural resources of the Highlands, your sister agencies and the state government have been ignoring even common sense in their decision-making process regarding this roadway project. North Byram Concerned Citizens, along with the New Jersey Highlands Coalition, has engaged the services of Rutgers Environmental Law Clinic and filed an appeal to this exemption decision. This has been done to prevent what we feel is an abuse of the intent of the Highlands Act from taking place. I urge you and your staff to engage the DEP and DOT in discussion regarding this project and to correct this ill-advised exemption. Prevent further damage from being planned by the DOT. As you've heard me say numerous times before, this roadway widening project is wrong for Byram and wrong for the Highlands. And now, by outsourcing wetlands mitigation to another region of the state and allowing capacity increasing improvements in the name of safety, These two departments are setting dangerous precedents for future abuse of the Highlands exemptions process in other projects. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Candace Ashman.
I'm Candy Ashman. I'm a member of the Planners Commission, and I really am here to just cheer you on. But I wanted to give you just two or three things. I have sat where you sit three times, twice with the State Planning Commission and once with the Planners Commission, where you are on the cusp of releasing a plan, and your nervous is all get out. So I would just like to urge you on in some ways. I also think that you can come out with a plan, and by the way, the bad news is when you come out with a plan in November, it's a draft, and you have six public hearings, and then you have to come back and do this again. So that in itself is always hard, because then you have a whole other set of people talking about a whole other set of issues. I think that I would like to advise you to come up with a plan that does no harm. Think to yourselves, if I don't know, I won't do it. I will make sure that I err totally on the conservative side, because no plan is in stone. They get changed and amended as new data shows up. You never have enough data. There's always going to be more data. So you're going to be changing this plan as you go along. You're going to be changing a lot of things, because when you start working with the towns at the municipal level, the data gets different in some ways. It gets fined down. Maybe we once had an agricultural spot that the town refused to say was agricultural because they were growing flowers. And so those kinds of things are going to happen when you're talking at the local level. So be clear enough. The municipalities in this case have the responsibility under the law to implement your plan. And a lot of them talk a lot about how tough that's going to be. It is going to be tough, but they're going to be protected much better when they get through, and they certainly will be doing their job better, as everybody has said. But on the other hand, you have to make it simple enough. Now, what towns have been delegated to do is land use and density. So you have to be absolutely clear about what the uses are in a given area and what the density should be of that use. Once you get there, then you can work with the towns much easier. So I just want to cheer you on and say I commiserate with you in some ways. But on the other hand, I think it's very important to get going and do it. A lot of things are happening out there while you're trying to get this plan together. Don't be afraid. You can be wrong, and you'll be changed when the hearings come out for the draft plan. This is a draft. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you. Andy was the last person who signed up to speak. Are there other people who'd like to speak?
The way in line. Heng Lom, I think you guys are facing a task that's monumental, because in essence, you're kind of looking at the great debate of human activity versus Mother Nature. There's no way you're going to be able to come out with the right solution, because every day we have desires to have a better life, and every time we do that, we're affecting nature. And it's almost impossible. The only way you can do that is to ship 5,999,000,000 people off to Mars and put the rest of us back in the jungles, because everything we do affects Mother Nature. Well, with due respect with that, the everybody's mentioned about, it's all about the water. In fact, it's not all about the water. If it was really all about the water, then we can look at other solutions about the water. We can put in a desalination plant, which produced water at much cheaper cost than buying the land. My superficial research show that you can almost, with the nanotechnology, you can get 1,000 gallons of water for about 5 cents. And as I mentioned to some members of the council before, I'm charged 36 cents for 1,000 gallons. So it's not about the water. And also, if we're really talking about the water, then we can do like New York City. We can buy the reservoirs upstate. There's plenty of water. You can buy land in Pennsylvania, make a reservoir. So there are other solutions. If we really want about the water, then we should have Bergen County pay for the water. They can have a desalination plant. They can have one in Hudson County. So while I'm not against preservation, I'm a more of an outdoors person since I was a child. I love nature. I go fishing whenever I can. But it's, we all like to preserve everything the way it is. If we're going to do it, then let's do it for the whole state. Why pick a particular spot in the city, in the Jersey, and raise it to a pedestal and say, we want to save everything in this particular piece of ground? That's almost like, you know, especially with, in relation to some of the environmentalists who spoke before. Well, they're saying, why don't we save the lowland? Because that's where the water is. That's where the proper grounds for the water to go into the ground. Let's save the lowlands, not the highlands. So, you know, it's a whole issue of sometimes fairness, sometimes what we've done. Obviously, in the past, human activity have done a lot of things that are wrong, because we never look at the total cost of something. We only look at our economic model, only want us to look at our cost, but not the rest of the course. Like, well, we can burn coal, but it's cheap. But now we have global warming. But we never look at the cost of preserving the atmosphere. So it's more than simply let's, you know, save the earth because of the water. You know, you have to be fair also to the landowners. They had an objective. They follow the rules. They made the investment. And now you say, who cares about you? You know, we want to worry about the people in Bergen County and us and the people to come. Well, the only way you can do that is with a people reduction plan. We will not have any more people on Earth. That's it. That's the only way you can preserve everything under the sun. You know, this is almost remind me of when I was a child growing up and the teaching of Buddha. Buddha says, don't kill anything. Well, if I don't kill anything, I can't walk, because as soon as I walk, I kill something. So that's why the Buddha is sitting there, nice and quiet, not even breathing. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Mary Ann Smith. I'm the Township Manager of Hardyston Township, and on behalf of the Mayor and Council, I appreciate the opportunity to present a few things that are of concern for us. I reiterate the concern that was raised by the land use administrator, I believe, from Rockaway Township, in that local enforcement is continuing to face very serious challenges because of, there's been more direction, but there's still a lack of direction on how to handle things on the ground. And not necessarily from your charge, from the councils, but from the DEP and the prolonged nature of the process to be able to get answers has really created a lot of problems for individuals, and obviously their first point of contact is going to be the local official, whether it's employed or elected. So we're really still asking for more assistance in that regard. My next item is specifically with respect to enforcement and questions. Your staff has been very helpful in trying to meet our need. We had written to Dante about probably in August about trying to secure a meeting. There are a number of enforcement issues and questions that have come up within Hardison Township relative to some specific areas, which I won't get into detail at this point, but it's been since August. We've been requesting just a sit down to be able to have clear cut answers on what these directives mean in these specific situations. Again, Dante's staff has been relentless in trying to secure a meeting with members of your staff, the DEP enforcement agency, and Hardison Township, and we've yet to be able to have that meeting or even have one scheduled. So I beseech you for your help and thank your staff for continuing to be diligent, but it is becoming quite an issue for us.
The difficulty is getting the DEP enforcement staff?
Yes. We've offered to the last communication was the meeting would have to be held in Trenton. We said any day of the week, you name it, we'll be there, and you know, continue to not have a response. So and lastly, I just wanted to reiterate the comments of Mayor Hodson with respect to our concerns relative to areas outside the preservation area that have either town center designation or wastewater management plan approvals. Our municipality has adopted a resolution requesting written verification that those approvals will not be modified in any way as a result of the Highlands Master Plan, and I will give a copy to Dante. You probably have one in the mail today coming to you. In closing, Hardison is looking forward to being a good faith partner, but we do need continued cooperation and assurances relative to our planning area and also a vehicle to be able to coordinate with you when questions come up from our constituency as well as our staff. Thank you.
John, if I could just comment, and not that we need to discuss it here, but this has been a recurring thing. We've talked about this a number of times on the street level. How do we deal with it? I know I attended a meeting with in Warren County with DEP staff who tried to be very helpful, but there's just no definitive person to go to, answer to be gotten. I just want to throw it out there in the regional master plan that we might want to consider in our legislative proposals, or one of our recommendations, however we frame that, is perhaps some sort of ombudsman. That's probably not the right word, but maybe we need to create a position somewhere that's the point of contact for landowners and also developers and also local officials who, 2 years later, they do not know exactly what answers to give to, despite their best efforts. So let's throw that out there.
One of my hopes, Council, is that there's a way that this office, this building, has become not quite one-stop shop, but a center for the Long Island region who need information and need answers, so that we can continue to grow that process as we get planned.
My name is Mike Herson. I'm the co-chair of the North Jersey Group of the Sierra Club, and for the state, I'm the Highlands Issues Coordinator. I live in Oradell, New Jersey, near the Oradell Reservoir. The Oradell Reservoir serves 750,000 residents of Bergen and Hudson counties. There's a 17-mile-long, 60-inch pipeline that brings water from the Wanacue Reservoir to the Oradell Reservoir. This pipeline, called the Wanacue South Interconnection Project, was completed in 1987. Water from the Ramapo River, with headwaters in the Highlands in New York State, is pumped into the Wanacue Reservoir. The point is that we're all connected, and that more than half the people in New Jersey get their drinking water from the Highlands. We're all connected. When the speaker one of the prior speakers talked about importing water from New York State. This body should be aware that there's a population and development explosion in New York State and in the watersheds that New Jersey gets its water from. Rockland County on the Hackensack River is exploding with growth. On the Ramapo watershed, there is the Pearson Lakes is 70 units in development in the pipeline. Reitzman Plateau is 400 units. The Lauderdale development is 292 units. We've opposed the 107 units in Sterling Forge in Tuxedo, and there is a 1,195 units in Tuxedo Reserve that are in the pipeline. That's more than 2,000 units, doubling the population in some of those towns. Depletion of water resources is something I'm personally acquainted with also, because my parents had to redig their well twice in Orange County, New York, where the Walco River is. Depleted water withdrawals from our aquifers and increasing evaporation from our reservoirs should be factored into your plan. There are higher temperatures that have been documented by the Lamont Doherty Observatory, and those higher temperatures affect the rate of evaporation from our reservoirs. I was in this room recently when Governor Corzine talked about landowner equity. I'm concerned about the landowner equity of the homeowners and the residents who comprise 5.2 million people who depend on Highlands water. The sewer service areas and designated town centers are not the lifeblood of the Highlands, as some have suggested here today. It's the water that is the lifeblood of the Sussex County, the Highlands, and it's the water that is the lifeblood of 5.2 million people who are the economic engine of our state. If we're going to be concerned about the economics, you have to be concerned about the economics of the water supply for 5.2 million people. A strong regional master plan and a strong Highlands Council that protects the water supply for that 5.2 million people is essential. There is definitely a need for regional planning. I have served on two Bergen County planning boards. Each and every municipality in the state is under unprecedented developmental pressures. The Highlands is no exception. But the stakes are higher in the Highlands. The environmental consequences of poor development decisions in the Highlands can adversely impact virtually everyone in the state of New Jersey. If you compromise on water protection with 75-foot stream buffers instead of 300-foot or 600-feet, with water withdrawals that cause that don't maintain ecological flows, you will have failed in your charge. If you compromise the goals of the Highlands Act to satisfy land speculators, you will turn the Highlands into Bergen County, where I live. The lack of regional planning in Bergen County has been a detriment. If we had regional planning at an earlier stage, Bergen County would look a little bit differently than it does today. I urge you to stay the course and to protect the Highlands and its water and its environment for 5.2 million people and the future generations that will depend on it. The future generations will thank you.
How many more people would like to speak? We have more people speak than we have people here. But welcome.
Thank you. I'm Jim Warren, Independence Township, and I'm not going to go through the prepared remarks that I have because I don't think they're appropriate based on what I've just heard. For me, the issue really is compensation for the landowners. That is the issue, particularly the landowners and the landowners with large amounts of property in the Highlands. And I absolutely object, and I'm not a large landowner, I only have 30 acres, but the inference that everyone up there is a land speculator, I totally object to. I find it really distasteful. My comments, though, are that if water is of such great value to the rest of the state, if there are 5.2 million people or 8 million people or however many millions of people there are in the state of New Jersey that rely on the water for the Highlands, then they should pay for it. They should pay for it, and they should pay for it on an ongoing basis, and there should be, that money should be distributed to those who are harmed in terms of their land value in the Highlands region. And if you look at what we've already know, which is there are 300 million people in this country, and there are going to be 400 million supposedly in 35 years, I don't think the population will stop there. So in the future, if there's going to be this need for water, then there should be compensation for that water. It shouldn't just be taken, and neither should the rights of property owners without compensation. And that's all I have to say.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the council. I'm Tom D'Alessio, Vice President and New Jersey Director of Regional Plan Association, and I offer my thanks for this opportunity to speak, and more importantly, to hear the other conversations. Maybe I'm listening to a little bit too much radio these days, and I'm hearing the political ads that are out there, but this is the most incredible amount of discourse, the civil discussion, and I think perhaps our elected officials might learn a bit from this type of discussion. I commend you all on the opportunity to have this kind of dialogue.
We even have some elected officials among us.
Yes, yes. And as a former elected official myself, and a former member of a planning board, and a former member of the State Planning Commission, I wanted to emphasize what Candy Ashman had said. You are at an incredible moment at this point. I hope you do take the chance to take a breath, just to see where you are at this point. Take the next month to move forward in deliberate course. And I commend you for the time to allow all of us to catch up. Especially those of us who may have been engaged in other activities in the last couple of months. And I'll talk a bit about one of those activities briefly in a minute. I also wanted to thank you again for acknowledging and responding to the comments I made a couple of weeks ago about the importance of public comment, especially after the draft plan is released, and the opportunity to actually hear and react to the comments that you do. I understand that you've released a schedule and you're looking at that issue, and I appreciate again the commitment to make sure that every public comment is considered, and that actually before the plan is adopted, that everyone understand that no matter how significant or insignificant the message that they present to you, that everyone will be heard. I also wanted to talk a bit about how we're looking forward to the draft plan and the background materials, and that Regional Plan Association will be holding our committee meeting in mid-December to take a look at the draft plan, and we'll provide more formal comments during our public comment period. I would like to also talk briefly about how we look forward to very specific data on infrastructure capacity and on growth projections, and that we anticipate that large contiguous areas will be conserved in your plan. And we also anticipate that there will be significant opportunities for viable, sustainable, and desirable places to live, work, and raise a family. And we think that a regional master plan has to incorporate both of those very strong concepts. And in that vein, we produced two reports recently that I commend to you and to the audience to look on our website at rpa.org. The first report was released recently at the ANJAC conference on TDR. And it identifies the economics of a transfer of development rights program. With environmental defense, we engaged in significant analysis, and we think that the information that we presented is viable and valuable to your discussion. So I commend to you those reports. The second is a process that we just undertook in the city of Newark, where we engaged in a visioning effort and just recently produced a vision for the city of Newark, for the mayor, and for his administration. How does that link to Newark, to the Highlands? Well, obviously, without water, without other infrastructure, Newark will not thrive, let alone survive. And so we are now actively engaged in discussions with DEP, with the city and others, to ensure that there is sufficient water capacity for what we hope will be another 100,000 people over the next two decades in the city of Newark. Again, looking at something of that nature, We believe that you can not only have growth, but you can also improve the quality of the city. We've broken down our report into five different categories, discussing everything from an equitable Newark, to a smart Newark, to a green Newark, to a prosperous Newark, and to a Newark that can ensure that it's a place where people can have options and opportunities to live, work, and raise a family. I'd like to conclude by reiterating some of the comments I heard from Mrs. Ashman and others. The idea of do no harm is critical as you go forward. The idea of being conservative and flexible in your approach, but clearly this is a very progressive opportunity that you have. You do need to be clear, and I do think that you need to empower the towns to utilize the tools that they have to ensure that growth is responsible and that it serves all of our purposes, and also to make sure that we do preserve large contiguous areas and that no build truly means no build. I offer you my best wishes for success. I look forward to the reports that come out, and thank you again for this opportunity.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who wants to speak? Let me sum up where I think we are and the members of the same place. We need to schedule a meeting of the Plan Development Committee and the Vocal Participation Committee in soon, in the next week or two. The next council meeting is November 9th. Among the issues, it's clear we need to talk about then at that meeting are the state of the memorandum of agreement with the other agencies that we talked about, particularly COLE, but also the state plan and the other agencies we were interested in. And I think we need to talk about the centers in terms of, you know, some of the issues that were brought up here today. Need to be those exclusive issues, but those we need to talk about at that meeting. We need to try to find a date that works for as many people as possible for another meeting between November 9th and November 30th. And we need to make sure some of these comments get to the members who aren't able to be here today. Are there other issues that you might bring up? Is there adding to that or other issues?
We also need to have a budget and finance subcommittee meeting.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment. Over the last few months, we've heard an awful lot of science and an awful lot of very technical information given to us. I, for one, found this to be most educational in the months that I've been here, listening to the concerns, the positive and some of the negative concerns has really been a process for me, and I continue to pledge my involvement. But thank you for everyone for being here and giving us your feedback. I think going forward that will be very important to all of us.
So, Chairman, I have one other question. We heard a lot today about on-the-ground practical issues that we face on a daily basis, and the fact that DEP has not been that responsive, you know, to the residents' needs or maybe even to some of our staffing needs. We have a lot of people that are on loan to us here that are helping us formulate this plan. Like, could we not maybe ask the DEP for a loan or someone that can help on these day-to-day issues and some of these on-the-ground issues that are affecting municipalities?
We could. We have offers and a lot of contact with Commissioner Jackson and people understand. My sense of the problem is getting people with the authority to make a decision.
At least if there's somebody here that would have access to the people in Trenton that can get us those decisions, can help these local planning boards and these municipal managers and the like move ahead with their daily obligations.
Now, do you have any comments?
No, we can follow up. Yeah. If as Deb has indicated, it's an issue we tried to address earlier, and we have been working on other things, but apparently it's an issue that towns still need help with, so I will loop back to the commission and see what help.
And I would only add that I think it's a manifestation of the Act itself, how the responsibilities have been divided between DEP and the Council. And it's not that they've been unresponsive. I mean, I sat in this one meeting where they did their best, but there's ambiguities. It's not enough, and that's why it was really just sitting here, I thought, and I said, I don't think ombudsman is the right word, but like, there needs to be a go-to person. I don't think it could be just our staff, because we aren't the regulatory agency. It has to be some connection with DEP, so probably has to be a DEP person. I don't know how we work that out. We don't need to debate it today, but I think it's important we're on the right track.
Mr. Chairman, I thought the discussion today was good also. Tom or somebody made a comment about the quality of the conversation. I thought that was very good. There was a lot of good, insightful comments on either sides of these questions, and I think that, you know, as we dig our way through these pounds and pounds of paper, which even the public hasn't had access to all of it yet, I can assure you that they are out there, and that most of us spend lots of late nights on it. You know, that the comments will help refocus or find places that we want to really pay attention to in the last month here. I want to offer just one other thought that we're going to go back to sort of the pieces that we want to make sure we detail that staff, Dante in particular, about the relationship with state agencies. I've made a point throughout this that while much of our focus is on the municipal implementation of the plan, and that's obviously critical, there is a very large component that relies upon other agency implementation. We've talked extensively since the very beginning about this idea of harmonization. The science, the planning, the work that's being done here is cutting edge. It is at a level of detail and addresses concerns that have never been addressed before. And so I really see this plan as being a template as to what needs to be done and how it needs to be done in terms of growth and development and preservation in this region in order to meet the goals that the legislature set out for us. So really, we should be very proactive in putting that forth and encouraging everybody to go back and reevaluate past decisions. I think some of the agencies are, I would say, obligated under law to do that. I believe the Act actually sets out a process for the State Planning Commission to cross-accept this plan, but it will be the best science that's available to us. And I think it would be it would behoove everybody to go back and look at what this information is going to tell us. So I don't think people want to be beholden to decisions that have been made in the absence of that information that we can have. But it might be helpful to have the staff. We're going to put that on our agenda for the Planning Development Committee or resolution over the next couple of weeks to go back and, as they've done in the past, brief the council as to what the Act directs us to do. Because ultimately, our decisions need to be grounded in the Act. No further, perhaps no less, than what the Act for us to do.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add one thing to that. Point out to members that as we've gone through each of the substantive issues, those topics with the policy papers, we have identified specific coordination inconsistency things, and that those were directed to what agencies do. We still have to do one additional step, and I think that goes to the discussion Tim and I had this week, and his comments now are beyond that. We have some overarching things, harmonization, interacting with state plan, COA, et cetera, that are going to need to get laid out in that section. So we will figure out how to cue that up to you as part of it, whether it's a plan development or in some way. That piece has always been anticipated. And on the state planning coordination, just by way of example, we have been doing that as the state plan has been coordinated with us on all the things that are on their agendas. Again, things that we can't fully be involved in because our plan's not done, but still we've been talking to them about how we deal with things like centers, essentially we're not talking about, we have no authority to change where centers are. We have an obligation to identify what the science says about the whole region, so we've been talking to them overall about that process. They're in a pretty good place about it, but now it's time, I think, and we can do it in this process, to run it back to you guys to make sure we have the that piece built in then to the coordination and consistency section, which again overlays over all those individual things that related to topic by topic.
Donnie, there was concern earlier when you were out of the room about, you know, a possible conflict between the state plan and the regional master plan with the municipalities, wondering that if a town doesn't choose to buy into the regional master plan, will they be almost forced to in order to get cross-acceptance for the state plan?
I think that goes to what Tim was saying, the issues we ought to have a full discussion of at the next meeting, what the law
and
says.
And we have to get that out to the public who have a concern about this issue. You know, this is important. We've talked about it before. Right.
Let me just have one other thing. I know the change in schedule has been inconvenient for a number of members in terms of planning, and I apologize for that. But I would ask that anyone who hasn't, before you leave today, talk to Denise and tell her your schedule hour by hour for the next 4 weeks so we can have whatever maximum flexibility we can eke out for all the meetings, committee meetings, and council meetings we need to have.
We're all available for an overnight meeting.
Right. And no other comments? Is there one to adjourn? So there was a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Michael.
Take care.